As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
As you all know, first prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. Anybody want to see second prize? Second prize is a set of second prize. Third prize is your fire.
With the power of Grayskull.
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
And welcome back to the Pizzcast after a very long sabbatical. The last time you heard us, we were talking about films that were snubbed for Oscars, and now it's already time for Oscar season again. With me, as always, for the annual Pizzcast Oscar edition is Pizzcast co-host DJ.
Hey, how you doing?
Ryan.
Hey, how you doing?
Beer guru, Matt.
Hello.
And this year, straight from Florida, Ken.
Hi.
There we go. The introductions.
Everyone else gets a nice title. I get nothing.
Yeah, like Ken,
like,
teacher.
He gets to be beer guru. I can't be like professional alcoholic.
I just said, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, but you're like, you're established. You're established. You have street cred. I got nothing.
And he said you were straight out of a state of elderly people in oranges.
Exactly. So they have no idea.
Straight out of bad voting techniques.
I have not denied anybody's right to vote, nor have I shot any unarmed teenage black men.
Well, so, you.
There we go.
So, once again, here's how, in case you don't know, the Pizzcast Oscar edition formula. We spend the first part of the Pizzcast talking about the actors, directors, screenplays, and the next one we rant about our best picture picks. Which, this is the first year, I have not seen all the Best Picture nominations, and I feel dirty about it.
Luckily you have DJ, because he's seen all
the... DJ has seen...
I've seen everything nominated in all the major categories.
So DJ is really... I can only have opinions about 7 of the 9. DJ has opinions about all of them.
I mean, I got four.
Matt has one.
Yes, but to be fair, last year I did like 5, and it was a horrible, horrible event. It should never have happened. So this year I made an effort to not see any of them, and I saw one.
So this
failed in that too.
Way to do your homework, sir.
I haven't seen anything. So there you go.
So we're going to start off with the Best Adapted Screenplay. The nominees are Argo, which is based, I think, on a Time magazine article or Newsweek or something.
I heard about that one.
That has something. You heard about that one?
That has something to do with like the 1970s, right?
Right.
Okay. I wasn't born then, so I don't know.
The guy from Good Will Hunting.
Yeah, he's wicked smart. Wait, not the wicked smart one, the other one.
Yeah, the really dumb as rocks guy. Lincoln, based on Lincoln. Beast of the Southern Wild, based on a
play. The guy in the $5 bill.
Yes, exactly. Silver Linings Playbook, based on the novel Silver Linings Playbook, and Life of Pi, based on Life of Pi. Now, I've only seen 3 of these, Argo, Lincoln, and Beast of the Southern... I've seen 4 of these. Argo, Lincoln, Beast of the Southern Wild, and Silver Linings. So, taking Life of Pi out of the discussion, to me, this goes to Argo.
Argo.
I think Argo was a great screenplay. It was clean, and it was, for the amount of time it had to cover, I think it did a great job in making it so you could follow the timeline, the politics, and also the dialogue was brilliant.
I think one thing that with this is difficult because we don't really know what the subject matter was that Argo was adapted from. So don't forget that I think technically this award is supposed to go to the best adaptation of whatever it was adapted from.
Well, and that was the question I had, because when you said Lincoln adapted from Lincoln, the guy on the $5 bill, all that stuff. No, what I mean, there's been
it's based on several books. Lincoln's based on the
journal. Oh, two books, right?
Yeah, it was
based on the team of rivals. Vampire, yeah. Okay,
Vampire Hunter.
Exactly.
And the $5 bill.
And
so I was surprised when I saw the previews for Lincoln, which I didn't see, that there wasn't a lot of vampire hunting going on.
Well, the other thing, too, is I thought it was based on the Jefferson Davis slash fiction.
Oh, yes,
and
yes.
There was no... I mean, the love scenes between him and Mary Todd were just, you know... I'm like, totally, all tough. Right, where's the French sticklers, you know? It just didn't happen.
I think I agree, though. I think Argo takes this. I think, you know, and I guess it's early in the Pizzcast already, but I'll put it out there. I don't think there's anything that Argo isn't going to win that's nominated for.
I think Argo is going to be... I think Argo is basically going to... cleaned up because everyone thinks Argo was snubbed for best director.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask. Do you think that's because it's on its merits, or do you think it's because it's they were snubbed, or do you think maybe the fact that Ben Affleck won the Golden Globe for Best Director and wasn't even nominated?
He won a lot more than he won the BAFTA.
Like, that was the one that everyone's like, he was snubbed on Best Director.
Yeah, well, you know, I think as far as, and I'll bring it up, I think I'm going to bring this up later when we talk about Best Pictures. For the 7 out of the 9 I've seen, this is the first time in a while where I haven't hated at least one film. Like, these are all really good films. There's no great films, but they're all really good. And if you measure them up one against each other, they all have are very strong and all are, live on their same merits. Mm-hmm. Where it's not like we don't have, you know, a Schindler's List. Yeah. Like, one that is just head and shoulders above the rest. I think Argo really resonates well with people. Because Hollywood loves when Hollywood makes fun of itself, and also it's not Get Shorty. It's a really well done film about Hollywood making fun of itself, about Hollywood saving 7 hostages.
Who wrote Argo?
You mean the screenplay or the
screenplay?
I don't know. I can look it up
because that's what we're talking about. I mean, I don't know who wrote it.
Well, and that's where we're talking about the adaptation, and that's where I have a problem with this whole category because it's like, okay.
Written by Chris Terrio.
When you get something like Life of Pi, that was a huge best-selling novel for years and years and years, and then they made a movie of it.
Yep.
You know, Lincoln, there have been I remember a stat once back in the day, they said, like, there's more books written about Lincoln and the Civil War every year than any other subject.
Wow.
So that's another one, like, well, what are they adapting it from?
For me, why Lincoln can't win, and I know they've explained this in interviews about why... like, Frederick Douglass wasn't there. They've explained why, but to me, like, really, you can't put the fucking founder of abolitionists into the movie about abolition.
Well, and I don't want to get off on a boring, you know, lecture on this, but, you know, there's that is a whole other system of thing, and honestly, where we are recording this podcast right now, if you want to go about 2 miles east of us, that is where abolition started.
Frederick
Douglass had very little to do with it.
But there were no people of color in this film. Like, there were 4. I can count them on one hand. A movie about slavery, and there were 4, and only one of them was really free. You know, and
was that the 54th soldier that they brought in? Because I heard about that part.
Are we talking about Lincoln, or are we on Django?
No, we're
on Lincoln.
Yes, there were a few not-so-honest movies about slavery this year. But I will say about Lincoln, Tony Kushner wrote a great story.
Tony Kushner's a great writer.
He's a great writer. And he really made a film, you know, about a debate. I mean, it's a 2.5-hour movie. It's a 2.5-hour debate. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating, and it's entertaining. I think he did a great job putting it all together, but I think Argo, it's just crisper. It's cleaner.
I think Tony Kushner will win an Oscar someday.
It won't be this.
All right, so now we've all agreed on Argo. writing the original screenplay.
Argo sucked!
Says the guy who didn't see it.
Says the guy. original screenplay, Amour, Moonrise Kingdom, Django Unchained, Zero Dark Thirty, and Flight. Original screenplay.
I think this one's going to Amour.
Amour, really? Really?
I think Amour is going to take this and Best Foreign Film.
Wow. Do you think this is for it not going to win... Because this is what they got Tarantino.
This is the secondary prize.
Right. If you don't win Best Picture, you win Best Screenplay a lot of the time.
No, because I don't think Amour has any shot at Best Picture.
No, it doesn't at all.
If Argo doesn't win Best Picture, I don't think it's going to be Amour that takes it. But I just think, given that it's a foreign film that has now been nominated in... at least 2 other categories outside Best Foreign Film, I just think the Academy is going to give something else to it, and I think it's going to be screenplay. Personally, I'd like to see Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah, I actually think that's going
to
win.
Out of that list,
I'd love to see that happen.
Out of that list that you just read, and again, I'm the guy that saw none of these, out of that list, Moonrise Kingdom is the one I want to see, if for no other reason that every time I see a Wes Anderson flick, I don't know what I'm going to get. I know I'm going to get a Wes Anderson flick, but I don't know... what's coming. I know at the end of the day I'm going to walk out and go, that wasn't a total waste of 2 hours, but it wasn't also the most amazing thing I've ever seen. It was entertaining.
No, I think Wes Anderson's... I haven't seen Moonrise Kingdom yet, and I want to, but...
And it was
still
around, so there you go.
Well, there you go. I think Moonrise King... I think Wes Anderson movies often... I love it that it's nominated, because I feel like his movies always get forgotten. Yeah, Royal Tannenbaum's Rushmore.
Royal Tannenbaum's an amazing movie.
And it got snubbed. Utterly snubbed.
Was Hackman nominated for Royal Tannenbaum?
I don't think any... I mean, I have to look it up.
No,
I
mean, you have Hackman in there. Angelica Houston probably could have gotten a nomination on that one, too.
Luke Wilson, Peltro.
Really good acting.
That was a great
fantastic direction for writing.
Prior to
cinematography, even. The way it was just... The feel of that picture was... I mean, and I like Wes Anderson movies... But I don't love Wes Anderson. But Royal Tannenbaum's for me is one of my favorite.
Yeah.
You say take 20 movies, it's always on that list because it's one of those movies that you watch and you see something new every time.
Yeah,
I think DJ and I are probably the only ones in the room that have seen Moonrise Kingdom, right? And I think it was just from seeing it. First of all, I would say I don't think it was the strongest Wes Anderson film. Although, as far as dialogue and how it was written, I think it certainly is a strong contender for this award.
I forget, did Woody Allen win for Midnight in Paris? If they give it to Midnight in Paris, would the chances be stronger to winning like this? Because they both have that similar, very unique style of dialogue and storytelling that...
Yeah, but Midnight in Paris was, like, for me, was my favorite Woody Allen movies that he's made since, you know, probably... You know, back when he was Woody Allen, you know, before he became a caricature of himself. And I went in to see Midnight Paris not knowing it was a Woody Allen movie. So, and I sat there and I said, Owen Wilson's doing a really good Woody Allen impression.
It's funny that you say that because I knew it was, and I've always hated Woody Allen movies. And I said this last year on the Fizzcast that everybody loved Midnight in Paris before I saw it. And then I went and watched it, and I got 20 minutes into it, and I went, fuck, I'm watching a Woody Allen movie. And I knew I was watching a Woody Allen movie, and I knew I hated Woody Allen. I just, for some reason, expected it to not be the same as his other films, and I hated Midnight in Paris. Just hated it.
Well, I'm going to take your word. I'm going to take both of your words for it. A more Moonrise Kingdom.
I think Django is going to win, actually.
Django is going to win?
Yeah, but I agree with DJ. I would like to see
Is he going to get his second Tarantino'd? That's what I like to call it. I mean, you don't win Best Picture, but you do win...
Django's
not winning.
Can we really just discount Zero Dark Thirty? Because honestly, I think that
there's no way they're giving that a writing award.
I mean, that's the thing. No. It's not about what. It's about I want to see them shoot Osama bin Laden in the face. Like, let me see that part, and I just need to see that part.
That
and I'm
should
done.
Have been nominated for Best Picture and should not have been nominated for Best Original Screen.
I felt with Zero Dark Thirty,
Best Director, not original.
Well, I will say this for Zero
for Bigelow.
Yeah, she should have been nominated. Yeah, and I apologize. I screwed that up. I meant to say Bigelow should have been nominated for Best Director. The film should not have been nominated for Best Screenplay.
What I liked about the screenplay for Zero Dark Thirty, and the only thing I liked about it, is they did a good job with explaining the politics and explaining, once again, a huge chunk of time, 10 years, into a 2.5-hour movie. But what I didn't like it was it lacked any type of character development whatsoever.
Character development, the plot was... Well, with holes.
Yeah, it was terrible.
I mean, I couldn't figure out who anybody was. You're right, there was no character development. There were holes all over the place. And the entire film is just a theater full of people going, when are they going to get to the Osama bin Laden?
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You're waiting 2.5 hours to watch something that takes... Honestly, I enjoyed reading the Esquire article in this month's issue with the quote-unquote, the shooter.
Oh, the person.
That was... I mean, that article, that interview is amazing. I don't need to see the movie, you know. Yeah. I know what happens now. And we all knew what happened on May 1st.
We all knew what happened.
I mean...
Spoiler alert, he dies.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Lincoln.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Matt, you haven't seen that one yet.
Well, yeah. I heard he gets out.
Yeah. No, he does. It's like Shawshank. It's great.
So, as we finish talking about Best Screenplay, Matt Foster has held us our first beer. Matt, what is this beer?
This beer is called War. It's a beer by... Yes.
Speaking of Zero Dark Thirty,
by a brewery from based in Boston, but they brew in Holyoke, Massachusetts, at Paper City Brewing Company, called Backlash Brewing. A special note in my heart because the owner is from my hometown, Taunton, which I found out last night when I met him for the first time. Really nice guy. I told him he was one of his beers, so we are. War is a saison. A saison is a Belgian style beer, famous for being quite spicy due to the yeast and the hops used. Usually brewed in the winter, and then used to sustain the farm workers all summer long. Usually medium-bodied, 7% alcohol. It's a 6.5%. He used rye in the making of this beer. The rye adds a big spice note to most beers, so this makes it even spicier. But then also he added hibiscus flowers, which is where you'll notice... You guys
from where I'm currently
from where he's currently living.
Flo-ride.
Flo-rida.
And you can't see it on the PizzCast, obviously, because you can't see. But the beer has a slight pinkish hue. Very similar to, maybe reminiscent of a beer from last year. DJ, do you remember this beer we were speaking of?
I believe I do.
Yes. Did you enjoy that beer?
No, I did not.
I didn't think so.
He's still tasting it, actually.
He's still tasting it.
In his nightmares.
I've got a pinkish hue and some nice floral notes from the hibiscus flowers.
But no clam.
No clam. No clam in this beer.
Clam should not be a beer.
That's, 2 years in a row, he's brought clam beer.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm looking at the bottle that I ripped out of his hand because I was trying to lick any dregs off the top. But it says that it is the Apocalypse series, yes. 2 of 4.
This is the second beer of the Apocalypse.
Do we want to try Pestilence?
It's not Pestilence.
Have you had Pestilence?
There's no Pestilence.
It would be a downer of a beer.
The 4 Beers of the Apocalypse is a series they're doing where they're making a beer to go with each of the 4 Horsemen.
Yeah.
And they didn't actually name it after the 4 Horsemen. Speaking to the history major who would know these. They named it after variations on them.
Uh-huh.
And it's done. The big deal with it is that a local artist did the art for each of these bottles. And it's it's kind of a big deal. The first one was Conflict. Is that the same thing as War?
Pretty much.
A white IPA.
No, War is worse than Conflict.
Okay.
Conflict usually leads to War.
Second,
it's the progression, then.
The third beer of the Apocalypse was Famine. It was a single hop, single malt. Be a famine.
Yeah.
Triple, really, really nice beer. I could have brought that one also, but this one doesn't get a lot of love.
What's the ABV on that?
The triple, yeah. I believe it was 7%, which was quite light for a triple usually. But again,
that's why I was asking.
Single hop, single malt, you don't get a lot of fermentable sugars out of that. And the last one will be Death. He did have to dump an entire.
Bum, 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 bum.
He did have to dump an entire tank of Death recently due to it just wasn't working out for him. He didn't like the way it was tasting. And then the day he dumped it, the funny story is the day he dumped the tank, he went to his local liquor store and saw that Alpine Spring from Sam Adams had come out. And he goes, "Oh, well, it's spring beer. I guess I can't make a Chipotle stout now. So there will be no Death this year. It'll probably come out next year." So you won't be able to complete your four beers.
Of Alpine Spring, I was at a restaurant last night and they had it on tap. Big ups to Sam Adams. The waiter said, "We have Alpine Spring on tap. You don't want that. It's disgusting."
Yes. Okay. I got it. It was a similar thing. I'm sitting in Florida and I'm going to the grocery store in Florida. And in Florida, they sell beer and wine in grocery store, which makes it incredibly convenient for us alcoholics.
They sell Yingling down there.
They do, I'm not a fan of.
It's delicious.
I'm not a fan.
Budweiser.
Oh, everything. It's always everything.
Budweiser, not sponsored by the Pittsburgh.
Exactly.
Or Sam Adams, apparently.
But, there's a lot of good things that Sam Adams does. But
making beer is not one of them.
No.
See, I paused. I'm like, he's got something. I'm going to let him have it. That hanging curveball in the corner of the plate.
Let me defend Jim Cook for a minute.
Well, before you I just want to say that sitting on the shelf in Publix, you had the Oktoberfest.
Which is a good beer. I like
which
that.
Was good this year. You had the Winter Lager.
Which should not be on the shelf for Oktoberfest.
Exactly.
That's your distribution.
Exactly. And then you had, the Alpine Spring. And I go, I almost want to buy one of each just to go home and drink
three of them
because it will be the closest thing to being home weather-wise.
Go to the Patriots game in November. You walk through the parking lot, you can do that.
Exactly. So, it was bizarre. I'm waiting. It's February, right? So I'll get summer ale when I get back.
To defend Jim Cook, Sam Adams is not making beer. I'm going to gesture at Ryan right now for you. Sam Adams stopped making beer for you around 1998.
Yeah, sure.
Jim Cook.
When you were
knows,
19 and drinking illegally.
Jim Cook knows that when you go to a bar like the 99,
yep,
or Applebee's.
It's not a bar.
I know you're when you go to a restaurant.
Chilli's,
Applebee's.
Don't you dare put Chili's.
None of us go to Applebee's.
No.
He does.
TGI Fridays.
I actually have a reservation to meet my boys at Chili's later.
When you guys go to those restaurants,
Duke basketball game.
When you guys go to those restaurants, you're absolutely going to drink a Boston Lager because it's Boston Lager, yeah, or any other direct that they serve. So Jim Cook knows he's got your business.
Yep.
His seasonal beers and his new release beers are not to get you to drink his beer. They're to get the guys that aren't going to drink Sam Adams to drink his beer.
Something different and something. And they
so
know if they like Sam
seasonal,
Adams.
Since
with.
The white ale, which I was a huge fan of 5 years ago,
the first
when
one
first came
that
out.
That was good, the first
when
one.
When it first left as their spring seasonal, every seasonal ale has gotten progressively lighter and lighter and lighter in order to convert the Bud drinkers into a craft beer.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So, but at what
and
point...
And you notice I'm still going to buy my... my wife's not going to hear about this, right? My one bottle of Utopias every other year.
Oh,
so
I've never had it.
I don't find a bottle every other year, but it's a fantastic beer. Yeah, now I'm in trouble. She knows I buy Utopias every other year. So he's not making beer for you. He's making beer for people that he can get new drinkers.
But at what point does a craft, does something like Jim Cook, which, you know, we all know he's not personally shoveling hops into the tank, but at what
That's
point
smart enough to.
Does it become not a craft beer anymore and now you are a mini Budweiser?
Well, craft beer is defined by the American Brewers Association, and they define it as a brewery that is less than 25% owned by a outside company. And makes less than 6 million barrels of beer per year.
Mm-hmm. Or if your name
is so a volume thing,
and whose flagship beer is all malt based.
Or if your last name is Cook.
Okay. Yes, there's been a lot of controversy because they did increase the barrel limits from 2 million to 6 million.
Well, that seems like a lot.
Sam Adams broke the 2 million barrel last year, the year before.
Mm-hmm.
But Sierra Nevada is also close.
Yeah.
And they realized that these are two of the stalwarts of craft beer that have been there for 30 years and have really made, whether you like the beer or not, have made the industry what it is now. And to exclude them because they make beer, that might
be... I have way more beer questions than I have movie questions, but I'm gonna put them on pause because I can see that Piz is getting, you know, it's a movie
it's
podcast.
It's an Oscar cast.
Oh, yeah.
Piz is getting annoyed, and I can see Amy Adams on his iPad.
Oh, Amy Adams. Oh, Anne Hathaway. And if I'm talking about Amy Adams and Anne Hathaway in the same sentence, it's Best Supporting Actress.
Oh,
so
not
this
not,
year.
Not
no, no,
a
not,
fantasy
no, no,
or
no, no, no. Amy Adams for The Master, which
and
no one
Amy
saw.
Amy Adams is jump out of the closet, no surprise.
Helen Hunt in The Sessions. Sally Field in The Lincoln. Jackie Weaver in The Silver Linings Playbook. And Anne Hathaway in The Les Mis, which is fun. I said it was the for everything.
Oh, it's like when people call it Sahara Desert.
Exactly.
They can just call it the Sahara.
Yes, I don't think anyone doesn't think it's going to be Anne Hathaway who doesn't run away with this.
Yeah.
But, you know, out of that list of movies that I want to see, I've seen Les Mis. Like, you know, like, what can you do with Les Mis?
But that's the thing. I think that's the argument against Les Mis.
Well,
as a whole, being nominated for Best Pictures, what more can you do with it?
As the only movie I saw this year.
I think she was, but she was the best thing about it.
Yeah,
I disagree
sorry.
On that.
Here's my thing.
I thought Hugh Jackman was the best thing.
Hugh
Russell Crowe? I mean...
But as far as Les Mis goes, Ken, you've seen it. You've seen it on the stage.
I've seen it on the stage. I saw the version that was made
in
with...
In 1986 Liam, or whatever it was.
Liam Neeson and his penis, yes. Was
what?
What?
I must have missed the billing in that poster.
We all know this, right? But
I didn't know he had a full frontal scene in that.
My big thing with this version of Les Mis is having seen it, not on the stage, but seeing it in concert, and having, all right, I'll come out and admit it, I was a drama geek in high school, so I did all these singing.
You're
things.
Safe here, Pat.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You're with it, yeah.
Having sung the songs, being familiar with
having
the musical.
Having tread the boards, as they say.
As they say. Having been familiar with the musical, reading the book again for the first time in a long time. Every time I've seen Les Mis performed on stage, they sing the songs.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time I've ever seen a production where they acted. Song.
And this is—I think we're going to get to this later as well.
But it's for Anne Hathaway.
Film. Yeah,
this is a big deal because Anne Hathaway plays
Fontaine.
And Fontaine's song "Dream a Dream" is one of it's a watershed moment in the movie musical. It's also a watershed moment
in real life.
It's supposed to be an amazingly emotional moment,
but it's
never, not supposed to be a dry eye in the house.
But it never is on stage. That's always the opportunity for the actress to make her bones. That's where she sings her ass off, and it's the song that gets her next part. Mm-hmm. So she turns it into this ballad. And it's not a ballad. It never was a ballad.
It's a lamentation.
It's a lamentation. She's cutting her hair to sell it, and she's pulling out her teeth to sell them, to pay for a child that she's never going to see again while she's laying down for sailors. It's not a ballad. And every single time you see it sung as if it was a love song. And it's not a love song. And it's supposed to be sung exactly the way she's saying it, and I have never seen anyone sing it. That way.
I think I'm not saying anything bad about Hugh Jackman. Hugh Jackman
you
was
better not.
Was awesome. I love the part where he let his claws glow in front of the students union and was like, "We're going to take care of this government."
But with that being said, I thought Anne Hathaway's performance in that was borderline. It was the one thing that I was looking forward to it as a fan of Anne Hathaway and also of the musical.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it was a lot like the Christian Bale role in The Fighter, where I thought it was one of the best parts about that film. Sets aside, like, there were a lot of good things about it, and there were a lot of bad things about it. But I think it was one of the better things about that film. I think she really carried it. And I saw three of these other films, and, you know, Sally Field is good as Mary Todd, and Jackie Weaver is good as kind of a displaced mother. I really thought Anne Hathaway was, out of the five, the three I saw, was the best of it.
See, the interesting thing is, again, and I'm the guy that's seen none of these, so I'm just going off of trailers because I do watch those. And like I said, I've seen Les Mis, they also take only 3 minutes. I've seen Les Mis, and that's why I was kind of like, I'm not excited about seeing another production of Les Mis. Hearing Matt's...
impassioned
plea. Is very impassioned plea, that I will probably end up seeing it. Because I agree with him that it's always been sung and not acted, and I'd like to see that done. But out of this list, the only film on there that I saw an actress, and I was like, oh, this is intriguing to me, and I want to, this is in my back of my head, I need to see this movie at some point, was Silver Linings Playbook with Jackie Weaver.
And I'm not saying that she was bad in it, but it's so different than Anne Hathaway. Anne Hathaway is the character that we all know. Like, everyone knows Fantine's song. Like, the Jackie Weaver, she was great in it, but she was very, very subtle.
It's a very subtle performance. And I think that's what was so great about her performance in Silver Linings, was that you have Bradley Cooper, who I think is giving the best performance of his career thus far.
Yeah.
Jennifer Lawrence, who, as we'll get to in a few minutes, is probably going to be adding an Oscar to her shelf. And De Niro. It's De Niro's best role in years. Yeah. In years.
30 years.
Yeah, it's his first Oscar nomination in 30 years. Yeah. And then you have Jackie Weaver, who I think watching the movie, you don't appreciate her performance as much as the others, but I think her performance is a key part of the movie.
It's very interesting.
She kind of balances everybody else out.
I think if they give Best Supporting Actor to either one of those two, actor or actresses to one of those two, though, it's going to go to De Niro and it's not going to go to Jackie Weaver.
That's a good point.
I don't think they're going to give them both of them, but if they had to pick one, they're going to pick De Niro.
Yeah, I think Weaver is known. I feel shitty saying that because it doesn't always go that way in Oscars. But a lot of times, the person who's known
has a repertoire.
Has a reputation.
Right. I think you're right on that.
I mean, Jackie Weaver, she got really nominated for that amazing Oscar.
Animal Kingdom.
Yeah. Which everyone said.
That was a zoo?
No. Oh,
no. Where everyone said.
That was
the guy from Google Hunting. He buys a zoo or something.
Jason Bourne buys a zoo.
It's a really dark twist.
He kills all of the animals inside. But he doesn't know who he is.
So it's okay.
Yeah.
Kill the animals if you don't know who you are.
If you don't know who you are, it's fine.
That's the Silver Linings Playbook.
Bottom line.
Oh, really?
Bottom line, I think Anne Hathaway's walking away with it. If there's a surprise in this category, I think Weaver's taking it.
Did anybody mention Sally Field? Because I think if Anne Hathaway doesn't win, I think it's going to Sally Field. Yeah.
You know, but here's my Mrs. Here's,
Lincoln.
Here's
I
my
hate
issue.
Sally Field.
Here's my issue with Lincoln.
I didn't hate her in this.
Here's my issue with Lincoln as
not enough vampire time.
As a movie, as a whole, like, we all know that Daniel Day-Lewis is one of these crazy method guys who just becomes the person and is the person. And from everything I've seen, everything I've read, he did an amazing job portraying Lincoln compared to everybody else who's portrayed Lincoln.
Did he free the slaves?
but compared to everyone else who has portrayed Lincoln, who's had that
did
role.
Did you say Louis C.K.? Louis C.K. did an amazing job.
I disagree, but I like that.
Have you seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
Exactly.
That guy's
like,
awesome.
But that's the thing.
That was Lincoln.
He's acting, and at what point it is, well, you are given great material because it's arguably the smartest president we've ever had who wrote so well and gave you so much to work with. And so that's my whole issue with Lincoln is, like, there's so much... There's so much to work with.
The best actor part.
Yeah.
But there's
we'll
so
be
much,
there. We're,
so, no,
we're
but I'm talking, but I'm talking about Sally Field because there's so much to work with. Mary Todd's story has been documented by people who thought she was insane, by people who defended her. I mean, there's so much material out there. At what point does an actor and actress start and the source material end? You know what I mean?
But as someone who saw her as Lincoln, it's not that she wasn't good, but it felt like she was just playing a crazy lady who happened to be married to the president.
Plus, I don't like her. I really don't like her.
Yes, thank you. That also goes into why I was surprised how much I enjoyed her, because I didn't hate her in it.
I think I'd make the same comment about this, too, that if they're going to give a supporting actor award, it's probably going to go to Tommy Lee Jones and not to Sally Field.
I'd agree with that.
And I think people should release
The Fugitive?
Wait, and that goes perfectly into Best Supporting Actor, where Tommy Lee Jones is for Lincoln, Alan Arkin for Argo, De Niro for Silver Linings, Christoph Waltz as Jet for Django, and Philip Seymour Hoffman in The Master. I did not see The Master, nor did anyone else.
This is honestly one of the greatest categories I've ever seen in any award show, because all of those are deserving of this award.
It really, you know what, historically, this seems like it's a really great category. Where I feel like every year we say, well, he could win it, with the exception of the Christian Bale year. Like, he could win it, but I wouldn't be surprised if so-and-so won it.
I think the Christian Bale year was great, because I thought it was unfortunate that Jeffrey Rush couldn't win because he was so good in the King's Speech.
Yeah.
Because Christian Bale was better than him.
Yeah.
And I saw the King's Speech first and I said, no matter what happens, when I finally see The Fighter, I'm not going to say that Christian Bale is better because Jeffrey Rush was so good.
Yes.
And then I saw The Fighter and I said, yeah, he was better than Jeffrey Rush.
But Christian Bale was the best acting I've ever seen in my life.
Was he nominated for his portrayal in...
he won.
He won. He won Inglourious Basterds. He's not going to... No, he's not.
I think this is going to Jones. I think Tommy Lee Jones has it.
Yeah, I agree.
I have a huge issue with Arkin being in this category this year because he has an Oscar on his shelf.
I know they do.
And Christoph Waltz, he should have gotten 2 that year. I mean, let's face it. I mean, I still check under my bed for Christoph Waltz. Like, he was scary in that movie.
Wait a minute. Never mind. I'm not going
to
make the joke.
That joke makes it sound.
Somebody else should be checking under my bed for Christoph Waltz.
Can you convert?
He's just that scary. So, but Alan Arkin, Little Miss Sunshine, really? I mean, when you had...
Yeah, he didn't deserve that.
He did not deserve that. And so to say, like, oh, he deserves it for this thing. No. You got yours. Go away.
In watching Argo, I'm honestly shocked Arkin is the one who got nominated.
Yeah.
I honestly thought we were going to see Bryan Cranston in Best Supporting Actor.
You said that to me before.
And he gets so little respect for his work on that.
You said that to me before. I disagree. I think Arkin was better than Bryan Cranston. I thought when almost everybody leaving the film, especially with the, with Arkin's, and I won't ruin it for people that haven't seen the film, but with Arkin's slogan for the film, I think he really stood out. No, I think he
did.
But I don't think he's the best in this category.
I have a film history question, and Fizz, you probably answer this. What did Heath Ledger win Best Supporting for?
Yes.
Okay, because that was the year when I saw that film before he died. And I saw that film, The Dark Knight. I thought that Harvey Dent, and the actor's name escapes me at this moment.
Aaron Eckhart.
Yes, yeah. Aaron Eckhart. Who I thought that the two of them did an amazing job in that film. And honestly, if I had to pick it, I would have put Heath Ledger as put him in the best actor category for that film, and Eckhart as best supporting, and as soon as he died, I'm like, well, Eckhart's screwed.
Cause... I don't think Eckhart had enough screen time to be a supporting.
But that's, that's why I would say supporting. Cause...
I think, though, historically, the Best Supporting Actor award is supposed to go to a person that when they're on the screen, they take away so much from the rest of the film. And Heath Ledger is a perfect example. I mean, I think there are a lot of people now that will argue that Heath Ledger gave one of the best performances ever in the history of the film in The Dark Knight.
I think
there are people that will make that argument. And you watch The Dark Knight, especially the first time I watched it, you can't take your eyes off the screen when the lights
on.
And that's why they give Best Supporting Actor for someone like that, because he wasn't the lead in the film. Although I have this, and this is a different argument for a different day, but I have this new wacky theory about the Dark Knight Returns, that the film wasn't even actually about Batman.
Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, that the film was actually, the whole film was about Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character. But, I think with The Dark Knight, that's an example. And Alan Arkin didn't do that in Argo.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, at what point do you have, because you mentioned you thought that it belonged to Bryan Cranston. So
I think Arkin was great.
He was the supporting actor.
I mean, I thought everybody. Hell, I put John Goodman in. I thought everybody in Argo. That's the key part about Argo, and that's why I think going back. I mean, we'll cover more when we talk about Best Picture, but Argo deserves anything it can get for me because it was such a well-crafted movie. From the performances of the leads and the main supporting actors, the actors you know, to the actors you've never seen before playing the security guard at the airport.
Right.
Like, everybody was just very believable.
And the guy from Mindy's Project.
Who was also the guy from the newsroom.
Yes.
Yeah. And your comment about the people, the unknowns that were really good in Argo, is a nice segue into my comment on this category. I don't even know the guy's name. How is the guy from Zero Dark Thirty not
Jason Clark?
He was fantastic.
He was the best part about the movie.
And I've been a fan of his since the Chicago Code was.
I don't know who he is.
Half the season.
Yeah,
and he was just in a movie Lawless phenomenal. This year, which he's really good in that.
Chicago Code was. I mean, talk about a Sean Murphy. I mean, that's a whole other podcast about TV.
Was that the one about the Irish brothers?
No, it was the Irish cop.
Lawless was the bootlegging brothers.
Yeah, that was the one. What's his name? Said he like, oh, I became an alcoholic and did drugs for it. But the what's his
Shia
LaBeouf? Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He was in that.
He was phenomenal in Zero Dark.
Yeah, that was my favorite part of the movie is the fact that I hope he'll get more recognition for or more movie roles because of
Zero Dark. Not Osama Bin Laden getting shot in the face. That was your favorite part.
Catherine Bigelow with him did as good of a job in this film as she did with Jeremy Renner in The Hurt Locker, and Jeremy Renner is now a massive superstar.
Yeah. Well, I think The Hurt Locker as a whole.
How do you define massive movie. Superstar?
He carried the Bourne movie. I mean, that was a huge film.
He was Hawkeye.
He was Hawkeye.
He was Hawkeye.
He's been nominated for 2 Oscars.
Yeah. I think Ryan's point about how the supporting actor is the person that drags your attention away.
Uh-huh.
I think that really, I mean, that's the Tommy Lee Jones.
That's the Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, you, maybe it's a way that his terrible toupee is focused on, but you are, your eyes always drag to him.
It's like in Gettysburg commands, with Tom Berger's feet
exactly.
beat it, it was, like, didn't move at all.
His wickedness is terrible, and it's supposed to be, but still, like, you are drawn to him, and he has some of the best delivery in the film other than God playing Lincoln.
Yeah, and again, Lincoln's another one where there's 4 other actors that could be in this category. Yeah. Too. I mean,
who did Tommy Lee Jones play? Was he Salmon P. Chase?
Yes.
He was the lead vampire.
He was Chase.
No, he wasn't Chase. He was...
I don't know.
Oh, God. Lincoln and the name.
Stewart?
Yes.
The
he was Stewart. Yeah. Okay, that's another... But again, as the history geek, that's another one where, okay, you have so much source material that you can really get inside of his skin and crawl around.
And he did.
Well, yeah, then
he
there
like,
you go.
It was...
Did it cover The Purchase of Alaska?
Seward's Folly? History geeks?
Only Tuna got that joke.
No, I got it. I just didn't think it was
I haven't
Stewart.
Seen the film. Now I really feel left out. Apparently there's an Alaskan purchase.
No, there isn't. Don't get your
It's in the sequel. It's in the sequel.
It is very much
Lincoln,
the policy
Lincoln
of the 13th Amendment.
Lincoln 2, Alaskan Boogaloo.
So we're talking about how awesome Lincoln is. And on the topic that's going to Best Actor, with Daniel Day-Lewis and Lincoln, Denzel Washington and Flight, Bradley Cooper and Silver Linings Playbook, Joaquin Phoenix, who stopped rapping for this, for The Master, and Hugh Jackman in Les Mis. There's no way I don't see Daniel Day-Lewis not winning.
This category's a joke.
No, I mean, it's... Is there any year where Daniel Day-Lewis plays a role that he doesn't... I mean, when he wins, he is going to be the actor that has the most Best Actor
Oscars. I feel like there's one he's going to win.
He did not win for Gangs of New York.
Yeah. Which he should have, because that was the only reason to watch that movie.
Right, he should have.
It was the bloop.
No, I mean, seriously, that was the only reason to watch that movie.
Daniel Day-Lewis is the greatest living actor.
John C. Reilly was fantastic.
One of the greatest actors of all time.
Yeah, I think he's become our generation's Meryl Streep.
I was going with Brando, but okay.
Is it Meryl Streep our generation's Meryl Streep?
Sure. But there's no question.
But Meryl Streep played a male rabbi in Angels in America. Has Daniel Day-Lewis dressed in drag?
Not yet.
Okay, probably not.
Possibly.
And played 3 roles in the same movie.
I think
there's no question he's winning it. But I think if you look at the weakness of the other nominees, I mean, this is a weak category.
I think if you look at Bradley Cooper. And this is the best we've ever seen Bradley Cooper act in anything, including the A-Team.
Yeah, he's by far the second best.
Yeah, but I think it's still, like, not as good
And well, no, it's not even close.
Yeah. My question of Bradley Cooper is, when did he become an actor and not just the pretty guy and a comedy troupe?
This year, that's the answer. With Silver Linings Playbook. Which, I mean, Cooper's actually from the actor's studio. He went to the actor's studio, so he actually should have some acting chops, you would think. Yeah. And I think he finally is starting to show that he does.
For me, this category has always been and will always be about who have we seen for a while now and who has made, like, the biggest departure. Like, Al Pacino has been playing Al Pacino for the last 15 years. Like, that kind of thing. If you see him playing something outside of that and really stretching as
I think that's what we start with De Niro and Silver Linings Playbook. Yeah.
So, but, I mean, Bradley Cooper, again, this is just off the trailer. I saw that and went, isn't that the guy from... And you just kind of... It's like when Jim Carrey first started... When Jim Carrey did The Truman Show.
Yeah.
I mean, he had been the rubber-faced comic, and now he is this sensitive, you know, deep actor, and you're intrigued, and you want to watch, and you're with him the whole time, and you're not going, I'm watching Jim Carrey. Right. You're saying, I'm watching this character.
Yeah.
So with Bradley Cooper, okay, I'm not watching the guy from The Hangover. God, thank you. What I'll have tomorrow after Pat Foster's done with us.
Almost on the complete opposite end of that, though, in this category is Denzel Washington, who's nominated for the same character he's been playing.
Well, he's been, exactly. And that's why I'm just like, Denzel's not going to get it.
No, and I was surprised Denzel got nominated. I think Flight is one of his better roles in years, but it against the other, well, some of these other nominees. Honestly, any other year, I would say Hugh Jackman. Hugh Jackman has this. Yeah. He was phenomenal.
He was really good at it.
I didn't see it.
As Matt was saying earlier, is that the reason why Les Mis stands out is, with the exception of Russell Crowe, who can't sing, they're all phenomenal actors. And they really
Russell Crowe. They even do act. Horrible.
He was awful.
He wasn't 30-odd foot of grunt, man.
No, but with Crowe, like, his first song was pretty bad. I think he got better throughout the movie.
He did, but I also think, knowing the music, knowing the storyline, it's a horrible part to play. He's got the worst part.
It's no fun.
It's a singular
part. Javert sucks.
His only function is to find Jean Valjean. That's it. There's nothing else going on for him. He doesn't have any.
He wasn't a bad actor in that role.
That's what I'm saying. It's not the actor. It's not his singing. It's the part. The part is very one-note.
I've seen the part performed on that PBS show, and he's not even in this category while we're talking about him. Where they're the Javert songs are just as powerful as any other songs being sung.
Well, and Jeffrey Rush, I believe, in the version with Liam Neeson, he was very good.
Yeah,
and that's a non-musical version. I'm not going to put the blame on Crowe because I don't think the part itself.
My part with Hugh Jackman is that there's performing. You're not standing and singing. They are performing the songs. They are performing movements, emotions. Angela and I laughed because every interview he did about it, he took the same chunk of music. Like, there's a song where I sing, and I could sing and da-da-da, but I sing it on my knees and I pray. And, like, but in truth, like, that's, like, it's different when you're doing a musical like Bye Bye Birdie, where you're performing and you're dancing, and that's what the dancing really is, but... You're performing the song.
And when are they going to Bye Bye Bird?
That's a great question.
You could have Justin Bieber going to Afghanistan. Yeah.
And Hugh Jackman was good. I mean, nothing wrong with Hugh Jackman. I just think that Daniel Day-Lewis was great.
I don't agree. I mean, I haven't seen the film. I with Hugh Jackman, I don't get Hugh Jackman thing. I've never seen Hugh Jackman in anything.
You hate Wolverine.
He does, like, comedy movies, but why is Hugh Jackman... Why do people give him any sort of street cred at all? I don't enjoy anything.
Because he's an age actor for a while.
He's Australian, so he gets a little bit of street cred for that, you know.
And he, this is the first time I think we all know that Hugh Jackman does stage work. He's been on Broadway. The average moviegoer probably has no idea that he was capable of playing a role like this.
Right. I'm going to go see Wolverine sing for two and a half hours.
Van Helsing.
Two sides.
I'm a fan of Jackman in his more, the Hollywood movies he's done. I was blown away by his performance in Les Mis. Yeah.
It was good. It was, he was really good. He was really professional at it. And some of the credits got to go to the fact that, like Ken kept saying about the social material, there's so much social for Les Mis. It's been a movie before. It's been on stage for 30 years. He's probably been in it at some point in his career on stage in some sort of off-Broadway performance of it. And it's been a book for, since 1785?
18-something. Like, I mean, but then you go back, and there's the French Revolution the, store stuff. And you can go back and read. You can read Tale of Two Cities and Les Mis at the same time and go, oh, it's commensurate.
Exactly.
The Dark Knight Rises. Pretty much a retelling of A Tale of Two Cities.
Exactly.
But I should say that I went into Les Mis without even knowing anything about it. I'd never seen the musical. I didn't really know the music from it. I went in almost blind for it. And I was
that must have been an experience for you because I'm sure the audience was probably not in your camp.
No, they were. It was pretty subdued. Like, I think,
really,
it wasn't because I didn't see it till it was at least that was out actually, for a month.
I expected people to say,
and this was that was why I didn't go see it. That was I was like, you know, it's going to be like, I know the story. I like the movie. I like the book. I like the play. I like the musical. I like everything about it. I'm going to wait for that on Netflix because I don't want to go see Rocky Horror. You know, yeah, I don't want not, that.
And there was he's talking about people singing along.
I saw it very late, very, very late. It had been out for at least 3 months. And I saw it in a movie theater in Hanson.
Why?
I know.
Because that's close to one plane in my house.
I know.
It would have been the perfect place for everyone in the theater to be singing the song. No one sang the song. No one sang the songs. I left the theater. It was the first time in I don't know how long I've left a movie theater and watched people crying as they walk out.
Yeah, I can.
People cry at the end of Twilight. Right?
Yes, this wasn't a Twilight crowd. This wasn't the prepubescent teenagers that cried. They cried because, you know, their sugar cancer.
I know. It's not the same geographic audience, but I think, you know, they're going to release stuff and that people have some sort of a prior relationship with it.
But I think we all get the same emotional experience as a terrible segue with Zero Dark Thirty. which goes into actress in a leading role, Jessica Chastain from Sugar Ditch. I mean, Zero Dark Thirty.
Sugar Ditch.
Quvin Zane.
She played Osama Bin Laden, right?
Yes. Quvin Zane Wallace from Beasts of the Southern Wild, Jennifer Lawrence, Silver Linings Playbook, Naomi Watts, The Impossible, and Emmanuel Riva for Amour. I have seen three of these. One of them was with the 9-year-old. I'm not saying anything bad about 9-year-old actresses. She should not be nominated for Best
Supporting. I totally disagree. She was fantastic.
Oh, come on. All right, she was outed.
This is the only one that I'm like, okay, hold on a second. She's nine. But hold on. She's not an actress. She was a 9-year-old that they cast, she's an actress because she's done a movie. But she wasn't an actress who studied the craft and put thought into it. She was a 9-year-old who played a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's not difficult.
She was very good in that.
So, okay, Piz's cat could play a cat and be fucking phenomenal. It doesn't mean I'm going to give them an Academy Award.
I thought she wasn't bad.
This is not Jodie Foster in Paper Moon.
Did you see the film?
No, but I...
Jodie Foster wasn't in Paper Moon.
Not Jodie Foster. Tatum O'Neal. My bad.
This is not Drew Barrymore in E.T.
Exactly. It's not. But at the same point...
Actually.
There was an established relationship in this film. There was a story between the daughter and her father, and I thought that she sold it.
See, I thought the father was so much better.
He was much better, I agree.
Did she not have a father? Is that what it is? Is she that far outside of her comfort zone at 9?
She has to spend time with dad? There was a lot of dialogue, and there was...
She didn't have dialogue. She ran into a script. She ran into a microphone, and they put it over the
room. I think you have to give her credit for the dialogue she did have and the way she delivered it. That was what drew me to this movie, was her voiceover in the trailer, along with some of the visuals. When I saw this trailer months and months and months before the movie came out. And that's when it got on my radar. Before there was any even buzz about it being an Oscar movie. And it was her...
He was hating it before.
What do you mean before there was buzz? At least that was the way up. There was buzz about this movie being an Oscar movie when it was in Cannes.
Exactly.
It was a shoe-in for Best Picture in Cannes. That's how I heard about it.
Yes.
And I
came out,
get to see it.
And it came out, and there was nothing.
Yeah.
It just died. It came out limited. I never saw it in the theaters.
Right.
That being said, I live in the sticks.
Right. When it was out here...
You said theaters, don't you mean theater?
When we get to the Best Picture discussion, I think I have a theory of why it came out and it died, but I think as far as for the Best Actress nomination, I think she totally deserves it.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. Well, it's going to Jennifer Lawrence anyway.
I have said this before, and I will say it again, you are completely wrong.
I can tell you who stole...
Yeah,
Denzel Washington stole Ben Affleck's nomination for Argo. I don't know whose nomination Steve stole for.
Now, if she plays Lincoln,
then I'm impressed.
Then I'll go for it.
You guys looking at that?
Look at you with the mole skin.
And I agree that it's going to Jennifer Lawrence, but I think this one's closer than the Best Actor one. I think that there's, I think this is kind of a two pony race. I think Jessica Chastain has a shot at this. And I know she's not going to win, but I think if it doesn't,
playing a character that never existed.
No, she exists. The problem with Jessica Chastain playing the CIA spook is that you're told that she's this tough girl.
It's fed to you.
Yeah, it's fed to you by other people saying that she's tough and she never gives up.
I saw the film, but Jessica Chastain, she was playing Claire Danes' character from Homeland, right?
Yes, exactly. Except not as well as Claire Danes.
Right, exactly.
Claire Danes. But that's the thing.
The exception that Homeland is completely fantasy.
But here's
not
the thing.
Anything
and that, you know, that was what I talked about Angela Cousard, is that when you were watching Claire Danes,
she's
and you tell
better.
People, and people were talking about Claire Danes' character as if she's driven and she doesn't give up and she always gets her man. You believe it because the way she portrays that drive.
Claire Danes is the best actor on television, male, female. She's the best actor.
Jessica Chastain, all she did was pipe.
Yeah.
Type and read. Well, and there's no depth. I mean, half of his problem
was
there was
fine
no.
In that film, but
she was okay, but she wasn't. She's not
going to
win.
There's no doubt in my mind that she's going to have an Oscar and probably very soon, given that
next
this
year.
Is her second nomination
in two years.
And her, like, eighth movie in two.
Yeah.
I mean, she's made
she's
in the last
everything.
2 years. She's made so many movies.
And I, it's not that I don't think she was bad in this. I just don't think she's going to win this.
Hmm.
I think it's going to be Jennifer.
This
Lawrence.
Is another one
I agree.
Where I saw the when I saw that Silver Linings Playbook trailer, which was playing in front of Perks of Being a Wallflower, which is the only movie I've seen since Dark Knight Rises. I was ready. I'm like, take my money. Why aren't you taking my money right now?
I would say that for a whole.
It was the whole, from top to bottom. Bradley Cooper, De Niro.
David O. Russell.
It was just, I want to see this.
Yeah.
Even if I don't like it after I've seen it, I want to see it.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was saying to Matt on the drive up here in the car that I made the same comment about, that I just said on.
Two girls, one cup.
I made the same comment about Heath Ledger. How
is all back my money.
But, Jennifer Lawrence was so ungodly hot in this film. I could not. Every time she was on the screen, I was
distracted.
Totally distracted by the rest of the film. She was so hot. I was like, there are a few films I can remember.
And she acts really good too.
She was fine as an actress. Give her
whatever award she's nominated.
There are films that I've seen over the course of my lifetime where I've seen actresses in them, and some of them aren't even great films. But I remember just thinking that, you know, the woman catapults to my list of hot.
Drew Barrymore, E.T.
Tim O'Neill and Paper Moon.
The one that really stands out for me is like Alicia Silverstone and Clueless. Like that always will be like the hottest.
Not the crush.
Not the crush. But when I was watching this,
so
I was
you're
just
like, you know, Alicia. So it's Moist Crevice. If it's Moist Crevice, you're there.
First edits.
She was every second Jennifer Lawrence is on the screen in this film. It is great, and then they get to the point where for like 45 minutes she's wearing spandex and running around. I'm like, I'm all, whatever award you want to give her, if I have to donate money for that, I'm fine, just whatever.
I want to make love to your shot.
Right. Here's the thing also about Jennifer Lawrence's performance is that it's also really deep and really good and really.
She was nominated for Winter's Bone, right?
Which she was better in
she
than
was,
this. I
but
thought.
She, yeah,
yeah, I did
but
know,
Ryan
absolutely.
Wants her to be
this
nominated
is,
for
this is the. This is the Russell Crowe Oscar where it's like you were so good at Winter's Bone
right.
And we couldn't give it to you that year. Here
but
it is.
It's still
yeah,
the best.
Makeup,
I didn't
the
see
makeup.
The Impossible or More. You know, but I understand that one is very good in More, but like out of the three I have seen, she's the best one of those.
Yeah,
three.
And I mean, I wouldn't be shocked come Oscar night if there is a surprise and the woman from Amour wins. That wouldn't shock me at all. I don't think it's going to happen.
But is your criteria the same as Ryan's of who you want to sleep with?
No,
like 90,
I'm certainly
right?
Not basing this.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't think that's going
to
happen.
If that's the case,
being
then Joey Heatherton half cooker goes to Washington. That's my every year.
These acting awards are so incredibly politically lobbied
right.
For.
Yeah.
And there's just so much money.
There's no way
she's
not.
Well, if
you're watching, they're making a push for Hugh Jackman. Which I still think Daniel Day-Lewis has it, but that's the only actor that I've seen in the last couple of weeks that it's obvious that the studio is
for
not
your consideration
right,
yeah.
For.
Yeah, and Jennifer Lawrence is there where the studios and everybody's paying the money to get her. Yeah. Jennifer Lawrence is now the, and I think she's better, but she's now the next Julia Roberts and Sandra Bullock. I mean, she's going
she's
to be
so
the,
much a better actress.
Right, but she's going
and she's
to
not
be,
afraid to do different roles.
5 years
is
from now.
Is she afraid to do nudity, though?
No.
That's an excellent question, and I want to ask
if
her myself.
If she's fully painted blue, she's okay with it. So.
We're going to find out in The Hunger Games.
The plug for X-Men Days of Future Past.
Jennifer Lawrence 5 years from now will be that headlining actress that, like...
I think she's already there.
Oh, yeah.
But I think she's going to surpass... I think she's going to go more towards... I don't want to say the Meryl Streep side of things,
really?
But I think
I
she's going to be a more... You well, hope respect.
I hope she goes more the Demi Moore
than,
side of things.
You hope Julia Roberts. And, well, I mean, Julia Roberts got to the actress part later in her career, but
you're hoping that she goes more towards the serious acting business as opposed to I want to make money. Give me my payday now. I'll do any.
Yeah, as opposed to I don't want to see Jennifer Lawrence start churning out romantic comedy after romantic.
See,
comedy.
I think that's going to happen.
Jennifer Aniston. I think exactly. You know. I think she's. Because she's smart. I think she's going to do...
She's also a very good actor.
Yeah, I think she knows...
She's too good for that.
Right.
And I think but she has phenomenal people working for her that can give her roles like X-Men and that can lobby for her to win Hunger Games, which is going to be the biggest blockbuster since the Twilight series.
And she's not here at this point in her career because she's beautiful.
Well, she's not here because she has a restraining order against her.
But she's here because she was so good in Winter's Bone.
I have to.
Yeah. And then she lobbied for the Hunger Games.
DJ, you said she's a good actress. But now, does that mean that Julia Roberts is not a good actress?
No, I think Julia Roberts is
a great actress.
Yeah,
Julia Roberts is a terrible actress.
But it's the type of... type of parts. If you watch Julia Roberts,
a bad actress.
Yeah,
really?
I think
Sandra Bullock was a good actress.
I think Sandra Bullock can do comedy. I think Sandra Bullock is a great comedic actress.
Yeah.
But I don't think she's a great dramatic actress.
No.
And I think Julia Roberts can play both. So. And I think Jennifer
Jennifer Lawrence can play that role.
I think Jennifer Lawrence
we just haven't seen her.
I just don't want.
And I
she's a very funny and very real person. I think that when it comes down to comedies. You can be like Julia Roberts and play that snark off as love. But when you listen to the Jennifer Lawrence interviews and you hear that, like, she's in fucking Hawaii and all she wants to do is eat at the Cheesecake Factory. like this is a girl here who was really just a hometown person and really is a tremendous actress, is very attractive,
but
is also very humble.
Do you know how popular she's going to become, though, when the X-Men trailers start coming out and when the X-Men... advertising comes out, that's going to be Jennifer Lawrence's picture.
Right? Oh, especially, once she wins.
Yep.
Because the first one she was in, but her part wasn't huge.
Right. It was bigger than I thought it was going to be.
I think we're going to see.
It's
I think there's going to be a script
reader. It's
like
Mystique in the X-Men.
Yeah. Who was the guy that played Zuckerberg in The Social
Network?
Okay, so Jesse Eisenberg, that was one of those things where some production company that made a picture with him for, $15,000.
Oscar winner Jesse Eisenberg, and he sued them.
Which
I did not agree with him suing them there because they should have every right to market him as
whatever they paid him. The movie with the shorts.
Yeah,
well,
like
that's the thing. What now with
cheap comedy?
Fucking the guy who won for Rango.
I love the guy that was
the director
Gore Verbinski.
Gore Verbinski is now the Academy Award-winning director.
Guy who uses fuck like a comma. Fucking watch your language. But this motherfucker over here just dropped it in nothing. Apropos of nothing. He's not even mad.
So he doesn't want to because it takes away from the body of a fucking
fucking that movie. I can't remember off the top of my head. Let me throw some fucking f bombs in there and fucking shit out.
So we're talking about people that are going to be able to use the Academy Award as a vehicle. We can go to the category where the guy who will not be able to use the Academy Award as a vehicle to get more directing pictures is Ben Affleck in that category.
Yeah. What movie took Ben Affleck's role from directing?
Almost all of them.
Let's just say the movies for directing are more Lincoln Beasts, Silver Linings Playbook, Life of Pi.
Life of Pi certainly shouldn't be there.
I'd agree with that.
And I don't think Beasts either.
Beast was just a jumble. It was more jumbled than Armageddon.
the end of the world, how
or the
chaotic
movie,
or the movie based on
when we
Michael
get
Bay's
to our discussion of Beast, I think I totally agree with you there. But who do you guys think is going to win? This one is where I'm going to drop my surprise of the day. Who do you think is going to win this?
I would love to see Silver Linings Playbook because I think David O. Russell, it's not going to, but I would love to see it win because I think he did a... And this talks about how good the movie is. The movie followed the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And the type of characters that you're watching, the movie follows them and makes you, it feels visceral. And I think it's all thanks to his directing. Yeah. There's a scene very early in the film where Bradley Cooper is going to read his ex-wife his syllabi so he can get back together and know her better. And he's like so happy. And like, there are a lot of like true funny moments where when I started the film, like I was laughing out loud. Mm-hmm. I was LOLing. Because it was very...
Third edit.
Mark tape.
That's it. I'm leaving.
It was...
All the Radio Geeks. Mark taped.
And I was very laughing because it felt funny. It felt real. And then you see his manic depression set in. And the entire movie goes... It does. And you crash with him. And I think it takes a great director to know that the tempo of a film... If you want a film to... follow the same trajectory of the characters, and if you want the audience to feel those highs and those lows, it's a tough role, and I think he nailed it.
So why don't you think it's going to win?
Because I think it's going to be Lincoln.
Yeah, I think Spielberg's taking it.
I think everybody thinks Spielberg's taking it, and this is why I think I don't agree. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, for Best Picture, did he produce as well as direct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's
but he's not going to.
So here's,
is this director or picture? Where were
you? Director. We're best director.
Okay, sorry.
So what is the biggest story of these Oscars? I mean, it's unquestionably the Affleck's
name. Affleck's
name. I think that in what's going to happen, and the whole idea, and the whole fact that all of the Oscars are so political, I think what's going to happen, I did that too. I think what's going to happen is
you're
going
to get to this, by the way.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this.
I think that the directors who get to vote on this award are going to vote for the protest, and I think they're going to take it out on Spielberg, and they're not going to vote for Lincoln. And I think that David O. Russell is going to win Best Director because of everything that Nick said.
But that's another, I hate to harp on it, but I think it's another source material thing. You know, what has Spielberg won Oscars for? He's made a movie about World War II, and both about World War II, you know, the Holocaust and D-Day, you know.
It's almost like, hard not
how
to
do you fuck that up? Like, you know, tell me a story where I don't know what's going to happen and bring me in.
I'm not arguing that Spielberg doesn't deserve the award.
I can argue against that.
Well, yeah, and I'm just
and he will.
I think
because it's his podcast.
I think that what's going to happen is that Spielberg has almost become, with Lincoln, has become almost the face of the establishment in this kind of Ben Affleck Argo thing. And he's the guy, if I had a vote, and I was a director, and I had a vote, I wouldn't vote for Spielberg here, because I would vote strongly that Ben Affleck was snubbed, and I think that Lincoln is the one that's supposed to win. That's the one that the Academy wants to win. I wouldn't vote for it, even if I thought it was the best of the five.
Now, my thing with best directing for Lincoln, I think it's really unfair to say there was directing going on, mm-hmm. when you can say, here's the best actor of our generation.
Well, and I agree with that, because everything
I've
ever read...
We changed some filter in the lights.
But you got to understand, this is a passion project for Spielberg. He's been making this movie for over a decade. This started off with him going to Day-Lewis saying no, and Liam Neeson being Lincoln for eight years.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then him giving it up and recommending back to Daniel Day-Lewis.
His penis being Andrew Jackson.
And I just think,
everywhere.
Yes, the movie rests on Day-Lewis's shoulders, but Spielberg made a 2.5-hour movie about the process of getting the 13th Amendment passed, and it's watchable.
But it's also readable, and I got to harp on sauce material, but we're arguing about Affleck.
Not the duck.
Not Gilbert Gottfried's former job.
Yeah.
But we're arguing about Ben Affleck. What about, are we even contemplating who else got snubbed in this category, which would be...
Christopher Nolan.
And Bigelow. Or Tarantino.
Nolan didn't.
No, let's pump the brakes.
I really enjoyed The Dark Knight Rises, but it is a mess.
It's an absolute total mess. And it was one of those like, oh, I know the three comic books he read to make this movie. Yeah. And I knew exactly where it was going, and I sat there for the last 35 minutes of the movie,
looking at my date,
who was utterly enthralled.
There was a lot of pressure. I don't think Nolan should have been nominated here either, right? There was a lot of pressure on Nolan to put that film out, and especially with what he followed with, I thought he did an impressive job. I've seen the film twice now. It was good. I've seen the film twice now.
I didn't like it.
But by the way, guys, there might be something wrong with the autopilot on the Batpod.
You know what? I went back and I watched the film again, and I don't know if any of the four, and you haven't seen it, and I won't spoil it.
I have not
it,
seen that one yet. No.
But when you go back and watch that film a second time, it's a different film. Totally. And I really looked for stuff that there's stuff that you have to miss not knowing how the film ends.
Is that because you were sober?
Well, you know what else? And the shooting had just happened the day before I saw the film.
Yeah,
so
that's hard too.
I was distracted by the shooting. I was distracted by the Batman stuff. And I was distracted by all of the distractions that Nolan wanted you to be distracted by, with the exception of the shooting. Watching it a second time, he very carefully snuck very subtle things in that film that you miss otherwise.
But not the whole autopilot on the Batpod. They kind of hammer you over the head with that.
That's what Nolan does, I think. All of his films, I mean, The Prestige, when I saw that a second time, I was like, this isn't even the same movie.
That's a great film.
Yeah, the second time around. But it was, for me, with The Dark Knight Rises, the story was what kind of was the biggest mess.
Yeah, it went from there.
But, I mean, and everyone's like, oh, Ben Affleck. I mean, Tarantino.
Yeah, I agree.
How do you not nominate Tarantino?
This might have been one of my favorite Tarantino-directed films since Kill Bill.
Really? That's another one. I'm just waiting for it to come out so I can buy it. Take my money. I want to see this
movie. He did a great job directing it, considering it's a Tarantino film. So there are huge jumps of editing and jumps of characters. And I think he did a great job. And it's one of those films where you can see he did a great job getting the best out of the actors. And these are already phenomenal actors.
Except he was the acting.
Yes, he was terrible. Maybe that's why he wasn't nominated.
Even if Tarantino, and even I would say even if Affleck was nominated here, I still wouldn't pick either of them. I personally would pick Kathryn Bigelow. I didn't care as a snub
or to get the award.
Yeah. Oh, she's not nominated. Yeah, if she were nominated, I think the best directed film that I've seen so far, and I haven't seen Lincoln, was Zero Dark Thirty, and I didn't even really care for the film. I just thought, it was a long film, but going in as far as like action films on the screen and how it looked, it was an amazingly wonderful visual film. I thought, especially the last 45 minutes.
But how much of that is the directing? How much of that is the cinematography? How much of that is the DP?
It was the directing, I think. I mean, I agree. It's a good question, but I think it was the directing. She can direct a hell of a war film.
Well, she proved that in Hurt Locker. That was amazing.
She's already won one because of
that. I would say
Hurt Locker is probably the best war movie. So. And for those that...
what was the one with...
Strange Days
is my favorite.
But for those that... You know, obviously I'm the guest here, but, you know, my thing is war movies. Yep. I mean, that is the best war movie made in 15 years, at least.
I love that. I think the Hurt Locker was better directed than this one.
I think
the Hurt Locker... I think they both had huge obstacles that weren't saved by directing. But I thought out of the two, you know, what some of the stuff that... I mean, DJ and I have had this conversation, too, where he disagrees. I thought that was a really great film. I thought that her ability to tell a story that was personable during a time of chaos was amazing. In this, I didn't feel that. Like, I think it has to do with the fact that Jessica Chastain character was written just an ounce better.
The writing's terrible in Zero.
I think the writing really hurt all the characters and the director.
I don't think the writing hurts the directing that film. I think the quality of the film was actually relatively poor overall, but I thought the film was so well directed that and the sound was amazing. Like I thought it was put together very well.
I'm sticking with the biggest snub was Affleck, and that's why.
So you're not going to vote?
And you're right, because that's
honestly,
he's going to snub us.
Argo was my favorite movie of the year, and I thought it was the most well directed. Considering, I mean, when you look at how many actors you have in speaking roles in that movie, and not only speaking roles, but speaking different languages.
And how many different parts.
Yeah, it's almost like Inglourious Basterds when you look at the script Tarantino wrote with three main languages.
Yeah.
So
I think with Argo, I think the biggest argument for Affleck is the fact that last 20 minutes of Argo, where you know what's going to happen. Like you can go to Wikipedia and read the end of this movie as a historical fact.
Well, if we're going there, they did a great job of making it up.
But that's what I mean. No. And that's the point. But, like, you know they needed a way.
You know how the movie's going to end.
You know, yeah.
You're still on the edge.
Jimmy Carter loses the election.
Reagan takes credit.
He should have just added aliens to the last 20 minutes of the film, because it would have been just as accurate.
Well, Howard Arkin is already in it.
But the point is,
his character never actually existed in real life.
Like Alan Arkin.
Yeah, right, yeah. But I think the point is, though, like, you know they're going to get out safe, but at the same time, it's a lot of great tension, and that you you were at the edge of your seat. Literally, I mean, I was.
I was, yeah.
Literally waiting to see what was going to happen. And I think all this talk about directors leads us to part two of the Pizcast, which is our best picture discussion.